Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Wednesday, the 2nd of March. Good morning and welcome to Africa Link, coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jen Ayeko Kumet. In today's program, nothing will stop them. Burundi vows to take over the chair of the East African Community.
There are allegations that there are violation of human rights. There are some civil society organizations which went to the East African Legislative Assembly to request that we be banned from the community and everything, but it won't happen.
Friends turned rivals. Zimbabwe's former vice president launches a new political party and vows to challenge President Mugabe. But what do analysts say?
She has been in the system since time immemorial, 34 years, and she only came out of ZANU-PF after being booted out.
ZANU-PF cannot fight ZANU-PF. What we have is a Mujuru clique which is going to take votes from ZANU-PF.
UNESCO restores Timbuktu to World Heritage as trial of Ahmad Al-Fiq Al-Hamadi, the leader of the Ansadini rebel group, starts in The Hague.
The mandate of the MINUSMA in Mali included also the support for the preservation of cultural properties. So the work of the International Court is also very important in this regard.
All these plus more coming up shortly. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We start in Burundi, where, despite political turmoil, President Pierre Nkurunziza is eyeing the East African Community Summit to take up the chairmanship from Kenya's Uhuru Kenyatta. The 17th Ordinary East African Community Summit commences today in Arusha, Tanzania. Top on the agenda is the negotiations on the admission of the Republic of South Sudan into the community and the launch of a new East African e-passport. Despite its bid to chair the organization, President Nkurunziza is not attending the summit. He's rather sent his second vice president, Joseph Butore. From Bujumbura, Apolline Ninyarora reports.
It's Burundi's turn to host the chairmanship of the East African Community, EAC, but President Pierre Nkurunziza's chances of being the next rotating chairman are very thin. Nkurunziza himself will not attend the summit to hear the decision. He is sending instead his second deputy president, Joseph Butore. Burundi's minister to the EAC, Leontine Nzeyimana, however, said Burundi is ready to take the East African leadership.
It's the turn of our country, whether the five head of states will discuss and agree. And it's very common in our community to see one head of state dropping the president of the community, giving it to the other president. They do discuss and agree. It's the summit who decide who to take. But for the time being, it's the turn of Burundi to take that presidency. We are very much prepared because we've chaired already. It's not the first time that we'll be chairing the summit.
Civil society groups in Burundi and in the East African region have been pushing EAC leaders to remove Burundi from the community because its leaders have been accused of committing series of human rights violations. The government of Burundi has dismissed these accusations, blaming the opposition of perpetuating the violence. Can the EAC's Legislative Assembly terminate Burundi's membership? Leontine Nzeyimana again.
There are allegations that there are violation of human rights, and this happened. There are some civil society organizations which went to the East African Legislative Assembly to request that we be banned from the community and everything, but it won't happen so because the East African Legislative Assembly has no mandate to exclude one country from the community and has no mandate to decide on whether a country should take a post or not to take it. If the heads of state decide, agree among themselves, Burundi will take the chairmanship.
It's already certain that the position of the EAC's Secretary General will be occupied by a Burundian in April when the term of the current Secretary General ends. The decision for the next chairman will be made later today in Arusha, Tanzania. Meanwhile, a mass grave said to contain about 30 corpses killed in the beginning of protest against President Nkurunziza's third term in April last year was discovered on Monday at the Mutakura neighborhood in the capital Bujumbura. Bujumbura Mayor Freddy Mbonima said the victims were supporters of Nkurunziza. Mbonima added that the mass grave was shown by a former insurgent who recently surrendered to security forces.
Il faisait le boulot de tuer et d'ensevelir toutes les personnes.
The insurgent was involved in the killings and burials of all those who were against the revolt. That is members of the ruling party's youth wing, Imbonerakure. They were all killed and buried in this grave. You heard recently that local and international media reporting about mass graves in Burundi. But did Amnesty International and other organizations who say they represent the civil society know anything about this one?
C'est que ils en savaient plus ou moins quelque chose.
Mayor Mbonimpa questioned the reliability of a recent report by Amnesty International that said it had shot satellite images of mass graves after the attacks on military barracks in December last year. Meanwhile, a team of three UN independent experts started investigations Monday on the accusations of human rights violations in Burundi.
Apolline Nyerora in Bujumbura. Now, the UN team of experts that Apolline just said has started its human rights violation investigation in Burundi will stay in the country for 1 week and subsequently present their initial findings on March 21st. This comes just after authorities in Bujumbura showed a mass grave to the public for the first time. The unveiling of the mass grave confirms reports that dozens of people have been buried in such graves since the political violence erupted in 2015. I spoke to Christoph Haynes, UN Special Rapporteur on extrajudicial, summary and arbitrary executions, about what his team will be doing in Burundi.
So our mission is a mission from the Human Rights Council. So the Human Rights Council asked the High Commissioner for Human Rights to appoint three experts, and we are investigating the Arusha Accord and its implementation, and also alleged human rights violations that took place, especially during 2015 and ongoing as well.
Do you expect to unearth anything beyond what we already know that could have a link to the government or the opposition?
Yes, we're meeting with both the government and opposition, and we're meeting with civil society, both in Burundi and outside. This is the first mission, and we will be conducting further missions during the year. And we hope that it will be possible to shed more light on what has happened, to in particular to look at impunity, because it's clear that there have been many violations, but it's not clear exactly who's responsible. And so the main focus will be to strengthen the system of accountability. And yes, we certainly hope to be able to get more information on what has gone on and what is going on at the moment.
Now, the government is blaming the opposition for a mass grave where it's believed that 30 people have been buried. Is this part of President Nkurunziza's attempt to change his image?
Yes, it's difficult to say at the moment. We just arrived yesterday and we have not visited this ourselves. So we hope that this is the sort of thing that we'll be able to give a more responsible opinion on based on our visit here.
Now, everyone is speaking about human rights violations committed in Burundi. Just how terrible are these violations? Could you just be specific and give us an insight?
Well, the figures that are given and the allegations are that about 250,000 people have fled the country, the refugees to neighboring countries, and that there's something like 400 people were killed during the last year. These are the figures that we are given, and these figures are used by many who discuss this, but we cannot say exactly that those are the figures, but it's also the allegations are made that there are disappearances that have taken place, the torture has taken place, and these are quite serious allegations.
And what's going to happen to your findings?
We're giving our first report, a provisional report, on the 21st of March to the Human Rights Council, and then we'll give a final report in September to the Human Rights Council with some recommendations attached to it.
How useful will your team's findings then be in ending the violence and political stalemate in Burundi?
Yes, I think from previous experience with other countries, these sort of missions have been quite effective in terms of ensuring some form of accountability. I think that is one of the tools that the international community has. Of course, there's no way in which one can undo what has already happened, but the issue of accountability, I think, is important. And then, of course, showing that there's international spotlight on what's happening in the country, I think already is something that adds to the sense of international accountability, that people are noticing what's happening.
I was speaking to Christoph Haynes, UN Special Rapporteur on extrajudicial summary or arbitrary executions.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
looks like Zimbabwean politicians just love three letters, ZPF. Having known no other rule apart from ZANU-PF, Zimbabweans may have to brave with yet another with almost similar initials. Former Vice President Joyce Mujuru officially launched her political party, Zimbabwe People's First, ZPF. Mujuru was President Robert Mugabe's longtime deputy until she was fired in December 2014. With her ZPF, Mujuru wants to challenge the veteran leader in the 2018 elections. As we wait to see what her party has to offer, Privilege Mufyanri tells us about the launch and people's reactions.
Mujuru was Mugabe's deputy for a decade. She was seen as the likely successor to the 92-year-old ruler before her expulsion from the ruling ZANU-PF party and government post on allegations of leading a treacherous group to oust Mugabe from power. In her first public news conference on Tuesday since her expulsion in December 2014, the 60-year-old Mujuru said she had formed a political party with a new vision.
Today, we confirm our existence, the existence of a viable, homegrown, inclusive political party. Zimbabwe People First is here.
Mujuru's support base is not yet clear. It is yet to be tested whether she will be able to challenge President Mugabe. Zimbabweans have reacted differently to the launch of the new party. Some have welcomed the new party and others remain skeptical.
My Mujuru has shown Zimbabwe that she is a true leader. She is a mother. If she is a presidential candidate, we believe that she will stand her two terms and leave it to other young people.
She has been in the system since time immemorial, 34 years, and she only came out of ZANU-PF after being booted out.
Certainly there's no difference that she is going to make.
Political analyst Alexander Rosero says Mujuru will have to work hard to win the hearts of the electorate after being part of Mugabe's administration for 34 years.
ZANU-PF cannot fight ZANU-PF. What we have is a Mujuru clique which is going to take votes from ZANU-PF. Don't overrate the influence that she might command in as much as the electorate is concerned. The electorate hardly forgets. They might appear docile, but they hardly forget.
To allay skepticism that hangs over her political career, Mujuru says her party is a new inclusive entity, but stayed away from criticizing her former boss.
I have known only one political party since I joined the liberation struggle. I'm now outside that party, and I will not go back. I'm neither a witch nor an assassin.
Mujuru is not the first to form a political party after leaving ZANU-PF. In 2008, Dr. Simba Makoni, a former finance minister under Mugabe, contested in the presidential elections and got 10% of the national votes. He was viewed as a party spoiler for the opposition.
Privilege Mushanri in Harare. And you're listening to Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet, coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
Behind the headlines.
In Behind the Headlines, is it just about pay or a breakdown in moral values? Corruption is often seen as a way of life in many African countries. As part of the efforts to curb the problem in Ghana, the government improved pay for police officers. But 5 years down the road, nothing seems to have changed. The police are still accepting and extorting bribes. This report by Jens Borchers has been adapted for Africa Link and is now presented by Jane Nyingi.
A truck stop in Ghana's capital, Accra. From here, the driver will head to Ivory Coast and then to Burkina Faso. Many like him are eager to tell this story about the agony they face on the road to their destination. They are forced to carry extra money to bribe police officers manning the checkpoints along their route.
Hey, we don't have something to give them. We are telling them everything. And they will say money, 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 and whatever. You see?
Well, everybody has got a problem. Nobody is perfect. So me, on behalf of police and customs, I can't say anything against them.
In Accra, we meet another truck driver. He's headed for Togo. His story is similar to the ones of his colleagues. At police checkpoints, bribes are the order of the day. If you don't give in to the demands, you will be in trouble.
But if you want to be stiff, they will find ways and means. Maybe they will tell you, this is your wheel boat, it's not well tight. So they are going to take you to court. Through that, maybe they will ask you to pay maybe 20 Ghana or 30 Ghana.
At some checkpoints, sometimes the truck drivers have to pay between $4 and $6. It's a lot of money for them. This expense is then transferred to the customers as part of transportation cost. Ghana's government is committed to end corruption. In the past 5 years, police officers got a pay rise to reduce bribery. But it doesn't seem to have solved the problem. Data collected by American researchers from 2,100 truck drivers who used different routes crossing Ghana revealed that they were each stopped by the police for up to 16 times. This does not come as a surprise to Vita Zazim, head of Ghana's Transparency International chapter.
This all has to do with greed. So even though you may increase the salaries of the police, habits die hard.
Vita Zazim believes there is a solution, and this is his advice to the government.
When you lose your job, others are looking at it and they see how you are going to suffer without a job. So you will be discouraged from engaging such as. But it's not just the salary alone. You must also apply the law rigidly to people who break the law.
Many view corruption as a way of making some extra money to pay school fees or rent. Vita Mazim from Transparency International says both sides are to be blamed, the person who gives the bribe and the one who receives it.
When you're on the road and you see the police stopping a car, the driver has done nothing wrong. The police has not even told him that or heard that you've done something wrong. And they already start pulling out money because they assume that the policeman is stopping them because he wants money. So you need to also sensitize the public to resist from offering bribes to the police.
But such an awareness campaign has yet to be launched in Ghana. And corruption goes on, despite the police getting a pay rise.
Jane Nyingi with that report by Jens Burrage, telling us about the corruption in Ghana.
Listen to Africa Link whenever you want. Sign up for our podcast at dw.com/Africa Link Podcast.
Ahmed Al-Faki Al-Mahdi, the leader of Ansardine rebel group in Mali, is before the ICC in The Hague. It is the first case of its kind. Al-Mahdi is accused of leading the destruction of World Heritage objects in the historian Malian city of Timbuktu in 2012. Aged 40, Al-Mahdi is the first jihadist to appear before the International Criminal Court. The case comes amid increased outcry over destruction of cultural and religious sites by Islamic State in other countries. In Mali, UNESCO has been able to restore some of the destroyed items, but just how significant were the heritage sites that were destroyed? I put this question to Mechtild Rösler, director of the Division for Heritage and the UNESCO World Heritage Center.
The heritage sites were very significant because 14 of the 16 mausoleums of the World Heritage Site of Timbuktu were destroyed. And also, in addition, 4,200 manuscripts, ancient manuscripts of the Institute of Ahmed Baba were burned. So there was a real destruction of the cultural heritage of humankind. We have from UNESCO already done the reconstruction of the mausoleums together with the local communities and our Bamako office, as well as donors from all over the world. And we have achieved the reconstruction in July 2015. And I think this is a great success story.
Now, just before you get into details of that, what does this mean for a country like Mali? And how difficult has it been for you to restore some of these manuscripts and other destroyed items?
It was very difficult because, first of all, we had to do the assessment what was actually damaged, how much could be recuperated. Then we had to get the traditional materials to work with those people who have the knowledge, because it's also, heritage is a transmission of the knowledge of one generation to the other. It was quite difficult. In terms of the movable heritage, which means manuscripts, etc., we were also worried about the high risk of illicit trafficking of some of the movable elements, including the manuscripts.
What you've restored so far, how close is it to the original, considering that some of the manuscripts were actually burnt?
Some of the manuscripts have been recuperated, and not everything has been, luckily, we were really lucky, not everything has been destroyed. So these are now all, you know, scanned, and we look forward to increasing security for the manuscripts and also of having the information from the manuscripts recuperated in different places.
What about the people of Mali and West Africa in general? What relation did they have with the destroyed heritage in terms of their culture, tradition and beliefs?
I think this heritage was extremely important. It was a heritage of their religious traditions, their spiritual heritage. It was very much linked to their identity. The same is true of the manuscript. I mean, it was a whole library of all of Africa, if you want. And the work of UNESCO together with the communities and the Ministry of Culture was very important to recuperate this heritage, to restore it, to reconstruct it. It was important for the identity of the local people, but not only for all of Mali, but I would like to tell you, it's the whole region, because Timbuktu was a place like other places in Mali, which was important for visitors to reach in the past. People did tours through Mali and then went into Burkina Faso and so.
Rusla, considering that Timbuktu is not the only world heritage that Islamic militants have destroyed so far, we've seen this happen in places like Syria, in Iraq, and several of other places that some Islamic militants have been operating. Is the ICC trial going to make a difference in this kind of a trend?
I think it's very important. The International Court is very important with its decisions. The mandate of the MINUSMA in Mali included also the support for the preservation of cultural properties. So there are different steps, but the work of the International Court is also very important in this regard.
I was speaking to UNESCO's Mechthild Rösler.
Opinion.
A UN team is set to investigate human rights situation in Burundi. There have been a number of deaths, and authorities in Bujumbura just showed a mass grave to the public for the first time. What is your take on this? Do you think it's necessary to have a UN team investigate human rights violations in the country? We've also reported about Zimbabwe's former Vice President Joyce Mujuru launching a new political party called Zimbabwean People's First. Mujuru was once President Mugabe's longtime associate. Do you think her new party has anything to offer? Should Zimbabweans expect a new form of politics different from ZANU-PF? Send us your opinion via text message to +491609575910. An email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.com/Africa Link. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations. Send us your feedback in a text message and sign up for our newsletter. dw.com/Africa Link.
And that's all we had for you today. But before we wind up the show, here is a reminder of some of the stories that we covered for you today. Burundi has vowed to take over the chair of the East African Community. Zimbabwe's former vice president has launched a new political party and vowed to challenge President Mugabe. With that, we come to the end of the program. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet. I wish you a pleasant day.